mixed martial arts and boxing fans, it's time for Fighter's Fury, Inside the Heart of a Champion, with your hosts, Brendan Tobin, Seema, and Tommy Guns. It's time for Fighter's Fury on AM 790, The Ticket.
Good Sunday morning, everybody. It is time for Fighter's Fury here on 790, The Ticket. Tobin here with you. Seema will be here momentarily as he is settling on in. We got a lot to get to. Busy fight night last night. You had UFC Minneapolis, a rare whole UFC card on ESPN. Did not help the fact that it was going, all the main events were going on at the same time. You had Charlo fighting on Showtime. You had Andre fighting on DAZN. And then you had Ngannou versus Junior Dos Santos. Although our predictions were correct that that Ngannou would get the win over JDS, it did not go long. And really, Francis Ngannou's last three fights have not gone long. He has eliminated all of them in under 90 seconds. And it's been super impressive seeing Ngannou's bounce back from the title loss and that awful showing against Derek Lewis, falling out of favor with Dana White, all of that stuff considered, that he had to go about this where he was looked upon as probably damaged goods, that a guy that hit the hype train a little bit too quickly and that wasn't going to be in the same fashion. He wasn't going to be the monster everybody painted him out to be. You know, I've always dubbed him as UFC Drago, that this guy was looked upon as an unstoppable force, the scariest puncher in all of the sport. And when he fought Stipe, it was hard not to hit him with the E word, that he was exposed, that he looked like a guy where if you could stand up to the firefight for just a little bit and you had any kind of wrestling, you could break that cardio. And that was going to be the end of the Francis Ngannou story. There were stories of his lack of discipline in training, that he wasn't a guy who was working hard at his wrestling, that he was going off to France to train. And so, you know, from a guy who the UFC was actually building in their lab, that he was at the Performance Institute and seemed like he was an MMA version of Bane, it looked like the run was going to be over after he lost the title fight. And then certainly after he fought Derek Lewis, which was one of the worst fights you'll ever see. And he said afterwards, I'm shook. I can't tell you that the title fight against Stipe affected me. And you're like, all right, well, is this guy going to bounce back? Is he going to be the same? And since that loss, I mean, he has been an absolute wrecking machine. Beating Curtis Blaydes in 45 seconds. Beating Cain Velasquez, who, yes, old as hell, has a cage around his spine. But even still, you would think has the perfect stylistic toolbox when he goes in there against Francis Ngannou, that he's going to do work. And he eliminated him in 26 seconds, so much so that that Cain thought that he busted up his knee because he buckled so quickly. And then last night he takes out another former champion in Junior Dos Santos, a guy who probably has the best boxing in the division. And so you're talking about a guy now who's laid waste to basically every contender or champion that we've had outside of Verdum and Stipe. I mean, he has taken out Alistair Overeem with one of the most vicious knockouts you have ever seen. He's taken out JDS, Cain Velasquez, Curtis Blaydes has looked like a monster against everybody but him. And here we sit, man. He's on the doorstep of another title shot, and it's hard to deny him because I don't know who else you'd go with outside of this Stipe DC fight. Good morning, Seema.
Good morning. You're pumped.
I was crazy, man. Like, I'm just very impressed. I thought after he started talking about that shook stuff from the Derek Lewis fight a year ago, I didn't know if we were going to see Francis back at the top like this. And he's been an absolute monster. He's been a machine. It's got to be the scariest thing you face 2 minutes in an octagon ever.
I would agree.
He's hellacious.
How about those kicks?
Oh, my God. Like, Michael Bisping was like, whoa, man. I mean, Michael Bisping, think about all the people Michael Bisping's in there with.
Yeah.
And he's like, whoa, that just sounds terrible. What's
sounded
going
like
on?
He was getting hit with a bat.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I was hopeful that it was going to go longer. First of all, thank you to the UFC for giving me a free fight so I don't have to try to watch it on ESPN+. So, thank you.
Shout out.
Appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
so I could see a UFC fight.
How was it for you? Was it nice? Was it nice just flipping on the old television?
It felt refreshing. I didn't have to go to a sports bar to watch it. I could just sit back in my own place and tune
just relax.
In. Yep. But, so I enjoyed it. I enjoyed all the fights, actually.
There was a lot of finishes yesterday. A lot of finishes. A lot of thrillers. Shout out to Joseph Benavidez, who looks like he's actually in line for a title. Now that Mighty Mouse is off in Asia, he finally gets to go fight somebody for the flyweight title. But we found out this week that Henry Cejudo is going to be out for a few months. So who knows what belt he's going to defend next or who he's going to defend it against. But that was a cool win for Benavidez to get that yesterday.
Agreed. He looked good.
He looked real good. But getting back to Francis.
Yes.
You watch that and you see what he's done. I mean, it's going to be interesting seeing what happens out of the DC Stipe fight and who's going to come out of that with the victory, because DC seemingly is hinting that he's going to retire after that fight no matter what.
I don't think DC can beat him.
You don't think DC can beat Ngannou? Just too dangerous.
Yeah.
Even if he were to, well,
see, DC, while he's strategic, he also is a risk taker.
That's true.
And he likes to impose his will on people.
Yep.
In the same fashion in which they can win.
Right.
It's like a psychological thing. Okay, you're supposed to be a wrestler. Well, I'm going to show you I'm a better wrestler. You're a puncher. I'm going to show you that I can hit harder.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, something inside of you in your heart just leads you down that path, whether you don't want to do it or not. Or you don't train, you know, your training and your strategy for the fight tells you to do something else. You get in there and the cage door shuts and the fans are screaming and yelling and you look across the cage and it's time to engage. I think sometimes those plans go out the window, and I could see DC wanting to really make a statement.
Right.
And at that point, what does he have to lose anyway?
The thing that I would be interested in is DC's never been the biggest money guy outside of the John Jones fights. Those always do huge business.
Right.
Would a DC fight against Francis do big business?
I think it would.
I think it would.
I think it would do much bigger business than Stipe.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the Stipe-Cormier fights are for fight fans.
Yep.
And these other fights are for, you know, these larger fights, the John Jones fight, obviously the mystique. And the craziness that surrounds a John Jones fight, especially up until this point. And the same with Ngannou. I think Ngannou is, I don't want to call it a freak show, but it has those connotations. And I do have to say this, there's no way that Ngannou is 6'4" if Dos Santos is 6'4". Oh, I just need to say that for the record, because
it's
the
crazy.
Tail of the tape said they were both 6'4". Somebody's lying.
He's big, man. He's big. He's scary. He's got those lunchbox type fists on him. But I really think that even with DC being maybe one of the best heavyweights of all time, one of the best fighters of all time, basically this side of John Jones, there's still an underdog quality to him because of his physique, because of his height, that every fight he goes into, like, I don't know. There's just this thrill of watching him try and overcome things. I mean, that Stipe fight was big for him because he was able to have a huge accomplishment that was outside of John Jones. So if he's able to get past this, I don't think he can make 205 again. Like, John was talking about this week, and I agree with him. I don't think he can make 205. And I think
John Jones?
Yeah. No. I don't
DC.
Think DC could make
205. Yeah, I don't think he can either.
I think it'd kill him. I think too many
cheeseburgers.
Yeah, I think it would just destroy him to the point of, like, well, what's the point? Is he going to be beat? Not only does he have to fight a guy he's never been able to beat, but now he has to beat the scale. I think it's tough sledding for him.
And John said that this week?
Yeah. Yeah. That it's just like, he's like, that's too much for him, and like, I'm kind of bored with the matchup, to be honest with you. Like, I've done it. And it's rightful for him to think that.
Twice.
You know, he's beaten him twice. Yeah, there was a steroid test after one of them, but we all watch what we watch. And I don't think that anybody coming out of that, other than, you know, that these guys talk tremendous trash to each other, what else could be said? Because John has the ultimate humbler in it. It's going to be a whole thing of steroid jokes and I made you cry, I'm your daddy. Like, we're going to do that again. We did that with the rematch. So if DC has a big money fight on the line, Yeah, I think that the Ngannou thing, if he's able to get past Stipe, I think that's I really do think that ends up being a big moneymaker for the UFC. I think that could be a really huge fight. Especially, I mean, like last night they announced that DC is doing these Kobe Bryant detail things, and he has Kobe Bryant tweeting out, "Hey, I got my man DC. He's now doing. He's joining up with me and Peyton Manning to that project." That's big exposure. You have a Kobe Bryant with his millions upon millions of followers saying, "Who's Daniel Cormier?" And I think that's a big deal. I think that's a lot of exposure to put on a guy, and I really think that it has just a real big charm to it. It's almost like a classic David versus Goliath again. With if you were to rematch against Stipe, there's a couple of things. One, I think you lose a little bit of the mystique because Stipe did break him. Like Stipe put a bad beating on Francis Ngannou.
Yeah,
and he's got the keys to it. And so while it's maybe like, you know, if Stipe comes out on top with the whole DC win, I still think that Francis deserves the rematch because he's pretty much cleaned out everybody he's been in there with. It doesn't get me as excited as a matchup against DC would. DC versus Francis is like the fight. I almost want to like say, hey, if Stipe slips on a banana peel, don't be afraid to just put Francis right in there for a step in fight.
I'm sure they would, without a doubt.
Be huge.
If Stipe can't fight, that opens up a whole nother dynamic, and I believe that Ngannou would he'd be in there immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun showing last night for Francis. And you know, to some people were like, I had a couple people tweeting at me this like JDS got right up. Like I don't understand. He wasn't taking much. Like he was full turtle. Like what Herb Dean's doing there, he's doing him a favor because he's gonna get his face caved in if he allows Francis to do what he has to do there.
Yeah, Dos Santos was not moving. He was not trying to roll out of that. He was not, you know, he didn't try to jump up and you know create distance. He was clearly balled up, and he didn't dispute the stoppage
afterwards.
He looked, and he was disappointed in himself.
Disappointed in himself.
But he did not dispute the stoppage. I thought it was a good stoppage. It was, at that point, it was inevitable. I was hopeful for a longer fight because the way that it started within the first 30 seconds, it looked like, whoa, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Because they were both throwing with conviction. You knew it wasn't going to probably go past the first round. But I thought that there would at least be some clean engagement. I mean, that shot that put him down wasn't necessarily the cleanest shot. So you kind of, I guess as a fight fan and wanting to see the train wreck, you wanted to see the Alistair Overeem type of shot to finish it. And not, you don't want to see it if you're a Dos Santos fan or see it if you're his family members. But just to continue to create this wave of hype, and to continue to push the groundswell up for Ngannou and what can be used for him to position the next fight or the next series of fights.
Right.
The guy's got an amazing catalog of knockouts.
The one thing I'm interested about, there's a lot of talk about like Francis' ego when he was up at the height again when he lost to Stipe and lost to Derek Lewis, that there was a falling out with Dana White. Because Dana was salivating over him going into those title fights, like, oh, this is the guy I've been wanting to be my superstar, which I think he can be. I mean, if you have a guy who knocks people out like that, it's basically the version of Tyson. Like, they would love having somebody like that be their champion. Do you think that there's any feeling of Dana White watching that cage side yesterday? Because Francis came over to him, and he's like, hey, give me the title shot. And Dana's, like, kind of lukewarm. He's like, go see what happens, you know. We'll see. What if one of them gets hurt? Like, not excited at all, which I feel like he should be.
Yeah.
I wonder if he regrets it all, kind of yanking the rug from under Francis immediately, and is just like, he hopped off that bandwagon so fast.
He did really
so
quick.
Fast. And
I think part of that, though, was the rumors that had been bubbling under and circulating about what his demeanor was.
Right.
Leading up to the fight and his camp's arrogance and the way that they carried himself.
Going to France or some nonsense like that.
Correct.
But even still, like, he's got to watch that and understand, man, if DC comes out on the top, like, I got a big fight now. I got even the businessman that he is, the savviness that he's got to realize, all right, I guess I got to hop back on board with this guy and fully support this because this could be a big one. I think that DC versus Francis.
A biggin.
We'll be back with more after this.
It's Fighters Fury on AM 790, The Ticket.
Ah, yes, welcome back. Fighters Fury continues. Just to let you guys know, also, we have a lot of coverage of NBA free agency coming up basically from 11 a.m. to midnight on The Ticket. So,
to midnight on Sunday.
Get yourself ready.
To midnight next Sunday.
Next Sunday, yeah, it never stops.
Every time I turn the radio on, man.
NBA free agency left and right.
Everybody's got an inside connection.
Yesterday in boxing, just to give you guys a little bit of an update, there were some interesting matchups on DAZN, Demetrius Andrade, who does some training down here at Delray Boxing and over at Henry Hoof's place. He had a shutout win over Selecki. He retained his WBO title, knocked him down in the first round. After that, it was pretty much cruise control. The only reason this, I mean, and the big reason this is interesting is because he has that last piece of the middleweight title, and Canelo was not really set on an opponent yet. There's reports this week that the Triple G trilogy, those negotiations aren't going well. And then,
surprise.
And then Jermall Charlo, he ended up winning over Brandon Adams yesterday in Houston. He looked really good. Really tough fight. Brandon Adams, I mean, God, he was taking some bombs in that fight.
Did he call for a fight with Canelo too?
Well, he did, but here's the thing that's interesting about that. So the WBC did this weird thing this week, Seema.
What now?
This is crazy. They dubbed Canelo the franchise champion. I don't know what that means. And basically, the way I read it, because I gave you the seven things here, it says the franchise champion designation is exclusively appointed by the WBC Board of Governors. The design is not transferable and is exclusively to the fighter who receives such designation. He will be designated as WBC Emeritus Champion once he retires from boxing. The franchise champion proudly represents the WBC in every fight as reigning WBC champion, regardless of any specific conditions, titles, or being associated with all future fights. WBC rules and regulations will be governed under the traditional conditions of boxing in the franchise champion fights. The WBC will approve, through the franchise champion promoter, every opponent scheduled to fight. The franchise champion agrees to participate in a minimum of 2 social responsibility events a year, organized with the WBC. The WBC may recognize the WBC champion in the division or divisions where the franchise champion currently competes. The WBC may award a diamond championship belt in those fights in which the franchise champion engage. If the franchise champion loses, the winner will receive the diamond belt and may be considered as mandatory contender of the division.
So Floyd's coming back. There's a diamond belt on the line.
I guess. One
way to get Floyd to come back.
So the way I read this is there's these reports that Canelo may be fighting Sergey Kovalev in his next fight at 168 pounds.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know why. When you have Charlo, you have Andrade, and you have Triple G out there at middleweight, why does he not want to fight at middleweight? And this isn't to say Canelo's ducking, because I don't know if there's guys.
He's won.
The guy's taking on a lot of tough contenders.
Well, based on bullet point number 4,
right,
he could technically lose the fight and still be the champion.
Yes. But he was the WBC middleweight champion.
Yeah.
And then yesterday this week they made Charlo their WBC middleweight champion, but Canelo's the WBC champion of everything. That's kind of what I read when I hear that.
Yeah, it's very, very a lawyer wrote this.
Right.
You know that, because it could be, there's a lot of gray area in there. It could be perceived however you want. And there's a lot of outs.
Yeah. Well, clearly the WBC wants to be in the Canelo business, and why wouldn't you? He's the biggest star in boxing. Everybody wants to be associated with Canelo if they could be.
That's why everyone's calling him out.
Yeah.
The Conor McGregor theory.
Yeah. But if he is the middleweight champion, he does have all the other middleweight belts other than the WBO, and I guess he doesn't have the WBO. I don't understand.
But doesn't have the diamond belt.
He doesn't have the diamond belt yet. Yeah. Yes. I don't know, man. Like,
is this the WWE now? So you're going to be like...
The million-dollar belt?
Yeah.
The million-dollar belt?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. To me...
They got the million-dollar 40-yard dash. Now they got this. The diamond belt. The million-dollar belt in wrestling.
What's next? If you were Oscar De La Hoya and Canelo, what is the move you would do? If you had Charlo, who's an Al Heyman guy, not under your umbrella. You have Andrade, who's not a big name, but he is. It's the easy fight to make because he is under DAZN, so it seemingly is a match made. Do you do the trilogy with Triple G, or do you risk it and go up and fight Kovalev, who's not what he was, but I mean, come on, man, like that's a devastating puncher. That's a huge risk. It's a tough fight, man. That's a tough fight, Kovalev, and I don't really know
what you gain from it.
Yeah, that exactly. What is Canelo Alvarez beating Sergey Kovalev mean other than he's walking around with some big ones, some big cantaloupes in those shorts of his?
He should call out Floyd for the diamond belt. Fight for the diamond belt.
I don't know, man.
Floyd's jeweler probably makes the diamond belt.
He probably
for the
does.
WBC.
Floyd probably is like, diamond belt.
That's interesting.
It's just me. It's like, what is that worth? A million? Nah, it's too poor to be on me.
He'll walk around with it in the backpack that he doesn't carry, that one of his guys carry for him.
Yeah.
I think we're onto something.
Maybe.
You could be a matchmaker.
I like it.
For ESPN Plus.
How about we put a ladder in there like WWE, and there's just a bag of diamonds above the ring. So you have to knock out your guy, climb up the rope.
Like a pinata.
Yeah, exactly.
I like the way 100%. You think.
So yeah, that's where things stand, but a good showing by Andre last night. So good win for him. Jamal Charlo, same thing. Oh, shout out to Erickson Lubin. He had himself a nice win. That's good to see. Cause they put him in there with, Jamal Charlo's brother about 2 years ago when he was 21 and he got starched flatline. And it's good to see him starting to bounce back, cause they were saying this on the broadcast last night, but probably too early for him. But another guy who trains in West Palm. So, a shout out to him.
Did he call out Canelo after the fight, too?
No, he didn't. He actually didn't call out anybody. He's like, look, I know that a lot of the guys have championships. He's like, all I want is a top 10 guy. Just keep giving me big guys. This was announced this week. So the UFC announced that Colby Covington will not be fighting for the welterweight championship next. He is going to be fighting Robbie Lawler,
the gatekeeper,
August 3rd in Newark, New Jersey. No, man, I don't want to call Robbie Lawler a gatekeeper. That's so hard. Robbie Lawler is he's maybe my favorite fighter of all time.
I think that's a good thing, a gatekeeper.
You think so?
Like, you got to get through me to legitimize yourself. We called Masvidal the gatekeeper for so long. Masvidal called himself the gatekeeper because he knew that if you beat him, then you can go on and fight for a title.
Right.
It's not to take away from the fact that they're on their mission to fight for the title as well.
Yeah, but George is
now. But you're not going to jump me. You got to go through me.
Well, George is definitely in the spot right now where, I mean, he wins next week against Ben Askren, and he's fighting for that title.
He's going to put him to sleep.
You think he's going to knock him out?
Yes.
I think so, too.
I think Askren's eyes are going to look at each other about halfway through the third round.
I'm a little bit interested in this. I'm interested in this for a couple of reasons. You know, Askren, who he's been Bellator champion, he's been ONE champion. He makes this long-awaited UFC debut, where he has this long-standing feud with Dana White, not letting him in the promotion. They say for personal reasons, but you know, Dana White may know, and he thinks he's a boring fighter.
He is boring.
He's a boring fighter.
It's like Maya.
And then he goes out there. Oh man, that fight is Maya.
Spider monkey.
I felt bad. I thought Rocco put up a good third round in that fight too. It messes with your mind fighting Maya because you are so focused on not getting choked out. It takes you so long to pull the trigger.
It's like fighting a wet blanket. How do you fight a wet blanket? Someone throws it on you. How do you get it off? It's like impossible to get off of you.
Trying to stir your way out of it. But man, I want Masvidal to be champion so bad, because I think that's how we get a pay-per-view down here. I think if Masvidal had himself a champion, if he won the championship over Usman, put that at the AAA, oh man, that'd be amazing. Because that last, I tell you what, man, that last card at Bank of at BB&T was so good, man. The crowd was jumping, smart crowd.
Yeah,
it was not like the old reputation has to die here for what this place is as a market, because people were really, and that was not like a that was not a who did they have? It was Jacare versus Joker. Was like, that's not a big billing.
No, not a big billing, but it's bigger than Demetrius Johnson, who they gave us the last time. I know. Around. That's what created all the flack from Dana. Said he'd never bring a fight back here.
Yep.
But we know he's a liar.
We
got a short-term memory.
This we know. He does have a short-term memory. But yeah, man, if Masvidal gets that win over Ben Askren, man, I think that'd be huge for him. And like the way he went into that Darren Till fight and just knocked him out in his own place, knocked him out in England, it was such a, you know, for a guy who's been in the game for so long, it felt like that was a game changer for him for his career. Like, you know, headlining like that, knocking out Darren Till the way he did in England, you know, had the whole thing with Leon Edwards afterwards where he's talking smack to him and he just walks over to him from the interview and just pops him with the old three-piece in a soda. But, man, I don't know how everybody in Miami is not rooting for George Masvidal next week. I mean, this guy comes from Miami. He's, you know, back in the days of fighting in the streets with Kimbo Slice. He's been in every promotion, every which way. I tell you what, you know what's cool, man? When the UFC was here, he got to talk to a bunch of kids. And, like, I've interviewed George Masvidal before. Raw dude.
Yeah.
Suffice to say, need a lot of dump buttons.
Yes.
I was wondering how this kid thing was going to go. It was such a good talk that he gave these kids about, you know, just fighting through life, being able to just stay committed and work hard at everything you do. Meant a lot to him to these kids that he was from down here. Mm-hmm. That meant a lot to him, really connected with them. And it was cool to see him have that kind of outreach for a guy who's been in the game for so long.
Agreed. Great guy. I met him during the promotion for Bellator 1.
Wow.
This is, what, 11 years ago? Maybe 12 years ago now. And met him, had some great conversations with him, even since then as well. And he's always shown, he's been a classy fighter. He's a fighter now. He's going to get in there and he's going to scrap and he's going to bring it. And I think that's what so many fight fans love about him. He's not necessarily a talker.
No.
He's just, get me in the cage, get me in front of my opponent, and I'm going to kick his ass.
Yeah, you're right. Like, he's just as real as it gets, you know? Like, he's not a bleep talker, but he's a very fascinating person.
What is a
person.
Bleep talker?
You know, he's not one of these people that goes out there, like what Colby's been doing. Colby, what he's doing, he's talking a lot of junk because he thinks that's going to get him noticed. It's like the Chael Sonnen.
I've never heard him use that word, bleep.
Well, yeah, I got to use it with him. Otherwise, I mean, one time I had him on the radio, see, but he cursed so much. He broke this little red button. He broke it, man.
He's hanging on its side.
He broke it. It was so, like,
we don't need anything else broken in here.
Did you see that when you walked in?
Yeah.
I think the building knows. It's
there's
like,
skylights now.
I think the building knows, hey, finally everybody's leaving in 2 weeks. I can finally collapse.
I thought there was renovation going on. I walked in, I saw skylights. Say, wow.
Oh, man. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit of more about UFC 239 coming up next week. John Jones back in the cage. Amanda Nunes back in the cage fighting Holly Holm. We'll get to that card when we come back after this.
It's Fighters Fury on AM 790, The Ticket.
Ah, yes. Welcome back. We were just talking about some local MMA that was going down. Titan FC 55 was in Fort Lauderdale on Friday. Shout out to Juan Puerta, who won over Claudio Ledesma.
You sound so excited.
Bloody fight. I watched this fight, Asima. I can't believe it didn't get stopped. Like, it was... Imagine, like, a water park of blood. That's how much blood was in this cage. It was... It was wet. It was not. So I just say, tough to put in some submissions on this one by the end, because because Ledesma got gashed open in the third round, and I was like, oh, doctor's gonna stop this. There's no way. They put in that Vaseline. They're like, go out there. Couple punches. In the
Who
fourth.
Was the doctor?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I've seen him, but I don't know his name.
Shields.
I don't
the
know
the old guy.
Didn't look that old. Didn't look too old. But it was bloody. So Juan Puerta kept his flyweight championship. And then Chase Hooper, who was the guy that the UFC was big on promoting because he was on the Contender Series. And he's 19 years old. He looks like he's 12. He had a dominating win. He went to 8-0. I don't know if he's going to be in the UFC yet because it looks like a stiff breeze would blow him over. Looks like he could use a little bit more cooking. But
he should hang out with DC for a little bit.
But he dominated. He looked great. So shout out to the guys there and the promoters. Now next week we got UFC 239 International Fight Week.
Can't wait.
John Bones Jones is going to be fighting Thiago Santos. And as he looks to defend his light heavyweight championship of the world. And I can't pick against him, man. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I like Thiago Santos.
You better not pick against him.
He trains down here, and I always like to root for the guys who train down here, but...
Especially a guy with a sledgehammer tattooed on his
chest. You have a sledgehammer tattooed on your chest. You're a badass. I'm not gonna question you, and Lord knows, he's devastating. But look, John's taking on guys who throw hard before. I don't know, man. I don't know where the path to victory is. He makes you so uncomfortable every time you step in that cage. The kicks to the knee, you know, the reach. Even, you know, look, John's been known as
an 8-inch reach advantage on this guy.
Yeah, and John's been known as a guy who will poke you in the eye as well. Like,
hey, it's part of the game.
He makes everybody uncomfortable, breaks you down, and by the time it all ends, you're just like, yep, I don't know who figures it out. So,
it's not illegal unless the ref calls it.
That's true, unless you warn him. So, yeah, I think John Jones is going to go into victory. And then the interesting thing will be what is next for him. Luke Rockhold is fighting against Jan Blachowicz in this fight, on this card. I think John versus Luke would be a fun fight. Luke now at light heavyweight. DC connection. They've been teammates before. Luke's very well rounded. Hasn't, I think, been on. I mean, he's had some really gnarly injuries, so his career's been derailed a little bit. And so he's looking to get it back on track. But I think that's a big enough name where you're like, all right, he's won the belt before. I could see him maybe beating John Jones here. But that's starting to be what it is. Like the names you're talking about are bringing up Chris Weidman from middleweight and bringing up Luke from middleweight because he's
what? Because they're getting fatter.
Getting fatter, getting older, and John's just kind of beat everybody. So where do we go now? He's cleaning out everybody at 205.
I'm calling it today. Fight of the night. Diego Sanchez, Michael Chiesa.
Yeah, that's a good fight.
Fight of the night.
Do you see that Damian Maia said afterwards? He said that he wants to fight Diego Sanchez next. And if I'm Diego Sanchez, he's like, what is this, the opposite person I want to fight? Damian Maia. If I'm Diego Sanchez, I look at that and go like, hey, Damian, all respect to you because nobody dislikes you, man, but no thanks.
Yeah.
No thanks. Hey, you know that thing
where...
That
would be the worst fight ever.
You know that thing when I point to the ground and we throw down? You wouldn't do that.
No, he'd lay on the ground.
Yeah, he's like, oh, you mean we take a nap here?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Cool, let's just figure that out.
He'd lay on the ground and he'd wave him in.
Yeah, man. So I got, I'm picking John. Like, do you, I think we're all, like, we're in agreement. Like, do you think Amanda Nunes is going to beat Holly Holm?
I do. I think she's too powerful. Holly Holm is a better, probably, I won't say a better, a more technical striker. But I think the ferociousness of Amanda Nunes is way too much. For Holly. Holly's not powerful.
No.
Holly is
she's a bunch of
accumulation of damage, and eventually...
It's funny, because she has the most famous knockout in women's mixed martial arts history with that leg kick on Ronda Rousey. But she doesn't... That's not her.
Like, no.
And this is the thing. There was a reason that fight was such an upset when it happened to Ronda, because Holly, when she first got into the UFC, like, she was barely winning fights. Barely winning fights.
Agree.
And so
she looks like she's river dancing out there when she's fighting too.
Yeah, man. But I think it would have to be Amanda being so careless that something like that happens again. And Amanda's worlds better of a striker than Ronda. I can't imagine her making a mistake like that.
Agree.
I can't.
I don't know if it gets out of the first round. You think it gets out of the first round?
I could see it making out of the first round. I could see Holly Holm being cute on her feet, trying to like make what? I'm just saying,
cute
like,
on her feet.
You know what I mean? Like doing a bunch of moves to try and like frustrate Amanda Nunes.
River dancing.
Yeah, river dancing, but like I think to the point where it's like she could frustrate Amanda, and Amanda's like kind of in her own head. She's like, all right, should I go here? Should I go here? Should I go here? And then round two, just blitzing her and destroying it. I could see that happening. I could see that happening. I think I wouldn't be surprised if what you say is right, that it doesn't get out of the first round. But I could also see a feel-out round. But she's the best. Like, look, Amanda's the best. She's got the best resume. She's beaten every big-time fighter there is. This is kind of the
ferocious.
Last. This is kind of the last one on her resume. But beating Ronda Rousey, Miesha Tate, Cyborg, Valentina Shevchenko twice. There's not really
she
anything.
Beat Cyborg in a round.
In a round. I mean, that's yeah. It's it. There's not really a competition for resume here.
Cyborg hasn't even started sweating steroids in the first round yet.
Hasn't gotten fully pumped yet.
No.
Yeah, man. I don't think that there's really any competition there. And then I don't really know what's coming down the line for her. And I think Amanda's put light to this as well. I don't know how much longer she's going to do this. She's kind of said, like, yeah, maybe one, two. That's it. I kind of want to get out.
One, two more fights or yeah. One, two more years?
One, two more fights. One, two more fights. But I kind of get it with her. Like, you know what's almost better for her? This is what I would say. If you're Amanda Nunes, it's almost better for you. Get one or two fights. She's made good money. I mean, look, she's main evented a lot of fights. I'm sure she's done very decent for what she, for what most women fighters do outside of Ronda Rousey. I'm sure she's done pretty well.
I'm sure. I'm waiting to hear where you go with
this.
Well,
this is what I would say. I would say it's almost better for her. Go away for a little bit. See if any contenders develop and have a comeback fight.
Go away. So go away, get rusty,
yeah,
and then bring yourself down to the competition is basically what you're saying.
It doesn't sound as a good plan when you say yeah. It like that.
But is that what you're saying?
But that's kind of what I'm saying, yeah. Because
okay.
I do feel like she's so far ahead of everybody in this division. You made, I mean, you kind of like put a damper on my plans.
I'm sorry.
But
not
yes,
my intention.
Yes.
I just wanted
that's
to clarify.
What I would say. I just think that, yeah, there's no harm in like a little seasoning, you know? Or maybe just take a year off. I don't know. But she has two damn.
I'm cool with her taking a year off, but I don't want her relaxing back in. Not fighting and then coming back for a comeback fight. You never know what happens in a comeback fight.
That's true.
And you give someone a false sense if someone beats her. Let's just hypothetically go with your plan of she takes 2 years off, allows the competition to build up confidence, comes back rusty and loses. And then you got one of these knuckleheads thinking they're the best fighter ever because they beat Amanda Nunes after 2 years off, soaking in the sun, sipping margaritas.
Yeah. I mean, she is 31, so she's not.
She's got at least 10 more years left in her.
The only person I'm seeing, like, in the rankings.
You don't want to see a 41-year-old Amanda Nunes fighting?
Nah.
What's wrong with you?
I mean, like, the only thing that you could look upon in these, like, in the top 10. Who, you know, I'd like to see Kat Zingano, like, get some wins because Kat Zingano's got the only, like, devastating win of her this side of the decade. So I'd like to see that fight, but she's lost three out of her last four out of her last five. So that's probably not going to happen. I can't imagine she's getting a title shot anytime soon. And the one time she did
Kat Zingano?
Yeah.
Come on, bro.
That's what I'm saying, though, man. Look, there's nothing here. I mean,
in either,
there is no 145 weight class. Look at it. There's no rankings. It's just her.
Well, maybe they need to create one. There's other organizations that have a 145, right?
Like what are you
just
buy?
Dana,
someone,
go buy somebody out.
Just buy somebody out.
Yeah. Buy that division.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Who wouldn't sell that division to the UFC?
Whew. I don't know. I think we're in agreement. Both champs are going to come out on top in pretty dominating fashion. So, Jorge Masvidal versus Ben Askren.
I do believe the John Jones-Santos fight will be a good fight.
Really?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it's going to be a blow. I didn't say it was close. Good fight and close are two different
you
things.
You think that Thiago
will be
have,
competitive.
You think Thiago's going to have a shot where we're going to be like, whoa.
Yeah, I think he's going to connect on Jones. Jones shown himself to be susceptible to punches.
Yep.
So
if you were to say he has a weakness, which is it's going far, it would be his hands. Like, as far as if you had to rank all the things that John has, you know, kicks, reach, defense, takedown, submissions, probably his hands.
So, and that's reach. I say reach. Reach is a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
So, reach gives you distance. If you can keep that fighter at the end of your punch, the reach is amazing. Now, if that fighter steps inside your reach and you can't connect with him cleanly or powerfully, then the reach is a curse. And when you throw those punches, how quickly can you bring him back into position to put your guard up or to yeah. throw another punch? The longer the reach, the longer that takes.
But then in saying that, if we're going to rank something probably also high, we put hands low. The elbows are probably up to the top.
Agreed.
Because his elbows are insane.
And I think that's why he has such fierce elbows. They do a lot of training with the elbows because of the length of the reach. The elbows give him a mid factor that he can utilize until he gets that arm back. He get that hand back and throw that elbow up. But I think the only chance that Santos has, Camp may beg to differ, but
It's like asking Santos to go in there. Hey, Santos.
Get inside the reach and land a bomb, and that's your shot.
Yeah, it's like, Santos, go in there, fight a buzzsaw, and try not to get cut.
Correct.
You can maybe you'll get lucky and you'll find a way to turn off the buzzsaw, but you're going to get hurt.
Especially the first half of the first round when Jones is feeling you out and he's very tentative and he's trying to read your movement and pace and, you know, get aligned with your style. That's your shot. You got to run in and throw a haymaker.
Yeah.
And you're going to eat a knuckle sandwich as well. So you better like the way it tastes, but that's your shot.
Yeah,
to land a big
I agree.
Because
as the fight goes on, he's usually breaking you down. He's probably
too technical.
He's probably injured something at that point. Your knee's probably a little bit messed up. That's stuff you got to watch out for. So Masvidal, Miami Zone.
He won already.
He won already.
He even gets in the cage.
You think he's going to sleep him early?
He should bring him a pillow and a blanket. That's what I think. I think he should walk in a cage with a pillow and a blanket. Throw it in the middle.
I think that would be actually a really good promotion for a weigh-in. Just bring a pillow and a blanket to the guy. Here you go. This Ben's like, what is this? This is for you. Give this to your corner.
My gift to you.
I gift this to you. A pillow and a blanket, please.
Sleeping bag, maybe.
There you go. Night, night. So this is interesting. So welterweight's at a point right now where Kamaru Usman's the champ.
Did you pick?
I'm picking Masvidal. Okay. I don't pick against Masvidal.
I didn't hear you clearly state that.
Ah, okay. Let me clearly state it. I don't pick against Jorge Masvidal.
No.
I don't. I don't pick against him. All right? 305. I don't pick against him.
You have it tattooed on your chest, don't you?
305? I do. If he wins this fight, does he get the next title shot? Or do you think the winner of Colby Covington versus Robbie Lawler gets the title shot? Because that was announced this week. Ben Askren, who's been in the UFC for 3 seconds, but he's got some beef with Usman. I figure
Askren and Masvidal are 5-4, right?
What do you mean?
Ranking.
Yes. Masvidal's 4, Askren's 5. And I would imagine Usman and Usman beat Woodley so bad. I don't think they're gonna do that fight for a while. And I think Woodley's getting some injury rehabbed. So I can't see that happening. Colby was the interim champion. They stripped him because he wouldn't fight when they wanted him to fight. So I would say he's probably, what is he, 1 right now? Colby?
1 or 2?
He's 2.
2.
RDA is not getting a title shot next. He already lost to Usman. So then it's Masvidal or Askren. So yeah, I would say that the only ways to go, Robbie's probably not going to get a title shot if he wins, but if Colby wins, he's definitely got an argument.
I would agree with that.
But Masvidal, if he wins, this fight's probably got as much heat as anything. I think if Askren wins, him and Kamaru have heat, they'd want to do that, even though he's got a controversial win. And if you're going to do Masvidal, I mean, like, Lord knows, that dude has put in his dues. He deserves a title shot.
Yeah, I think that when Masvidal wins, because his fight is a month earlier, puts him in a better position to lock that championship fight in. What I would be concerned about is if they wait till after the Covington fight and Covington gets the belt, not that Covington would beat Usman, but I don't think that they would be so quickly to put Masvidal versus Covington in a title fight, being from the same camp.
Yeah, well, I don't think Masvidal cares.
I don't think Masvidal cares. I think the camp cares.
What it mean? Is that going to be one of those things though, where Masvidal going to be like,
shall see.
Is Masvidal going to be like, I mean, he loves ATT though, man.
Like, he does. He will take one for the team. He's a soldier. Masvidal. I'm hopeful that he wins this fight and they make that title. They make that title shot. I mean, just the dues. Because
like Kobe Covington's been on, like, look, Kobe Covington won the interim belt and good for him getting that stuff. But like, Masvidal's been on the block forever. Like that guy deserves to fight for a championship. If he comes out of this on top and he beats Ben Askren, and if ATT's like, hey, look, we got two guys. Like, how do you not go with the OG? How do you not go with the guy who has repped you forever? And is giving you those guys those rounds and training with them and doing all that stuff.
And a year makes a big difference, plus and minus,
yep,
for fighters.
No doubt. Like, you go from, like, this we talked to Francis, like, first you're the toast of the town of the president of the UFC, and then he doesn't want to even acknowledge you.
Right.
You know, and Colby was hot last year, and he was in a big way, but you don't fight when they want you to fight, and then all of a sudden you're out of favor. And Masvidal, has he ever turned down a fight? I mean, like, never.
He's close to a Cerrone. And disposed of Cerrone.
He did. In Cerrone's backyard. It's kind of become a thing for Jorge. He goes into people's backyards and just destroys them.
He's the gatekeeper.
No.
I don't
like that term, man. I don't like that.
You're thinking of it in a negative way.
Because who respects a gatekeeper? If you have, if
you want to get in,
if
you respect
the gatekeeper. If you're stopping me from getting in the gate, we already got problems.
He likes those problems. No. Bring it.
I'm gonna find another way.
I'm defending the house.
Gatekeeper. When we had gatekeepers back in college, I would trick the gatekeeper. I'd get around them.
You climb the fence.
Yep. Whatever it took. Like a spider monkey.
Damian Mike.
We'll talk to you guys next week. Enjoy the fights.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.